our town.
Hello, neighbors, and welcome back to Nightmare Town. We are Betty Boom.
And I'm Mandemonium.
And this week we are doing...
Headshot by Theo?
Yeah, Theo sent it in. So, but we are not going to do the chit-chat thing. Well, we might do the chit-chat thing. We could do the chit-chat thing. So, we haven't really chit-chatted in a while. And I haven't really seen anyone outside of my home. Guys, I got the Rona.
She's got the Rona and she's in quarantine.
Yeah, I get out this upcoming Saturday. So the day after Christmas.
I like how you say you get out.
I get out. I get to leave. So that's, I'm an extrovert. This sucks. But
I can't understand from an introvert's perspective, but I do feel for you. It must be hard.
It is, and it's like I'm asymptomatic, so I'm not, I don't feel sick, which kind of makes it, it does not make it worse, because I've seen people that were sick, and I know that people have died from it. Does not make it worse whatsoever, but it's one of those, like, me personally, I'm a cuddly person, but I can't cuddle with anybody, because I have the virus, and I can pass it to them.
Yeah, and it kind of makes it harder, because you feel fine, so like, but you still can't go out, because just because you don't feel sick doesn't mean you aren't sick.
Exactly.
And spreading it.
So yeah, I've just been at home, which Bella has loved, but...
Well, thank you for being responsible.
You're welcome. Also, work told me that I was not allowed to come, and I was like, well, fine.
That too.
Not, all right, fine. I would not have went to work with the Rona. But no, it's just, it's been rough. And then, you know, this is my first year ever happening to miss Christmas, which, so yeah.
Yeah, I've got a relative that has the Rona too, and he's pretty bummed about it that he's going to be missing out too.
Good old Uncle Monium.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He's good.
We'll probably just leave presents on his porch.
So, but I don't know. That's what I've been doing. I've been watching a lot of Letterkenny, so I keep adding S's to things that don't need S's.
Oh, I love that show.
I enjoy it. But no, it's just been binge watching everything and drinking way too much. And then being like, oh, hey, I forgot to eat today, and then eating at like 2 a.m. Also, my sleep schedule is fucked.
Well, maybe you'll bounce back quick enough.
I hope so. So, but I miss you guys. I miss people. But
no comment here.
You're like, yeah, no, I'm kind of loving this.
Yeah, I don't mind.
But I guess we should just jump on into this episode, because we got some stuff to talk about in the middle of it and at the end of it, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
But until then, friend, tell me some stuff.
All right, well, I decided to go a little whimsical and mysterious this time around. I have written another story. I wrote this in my bathtub yesterday. I've been working on it for a bit, but I finished it in my bathtub yesterday.
Fantastic.
My phone case is waterproof, by the way. It's submergible for anybody concerned, especially my father who's listening and who gave me this phone. But, yeah, so uncreative title. This is just called Headshots. And I'm going to get a sip of water before I jump in.
Probably smart. Again, I've been drinking for 2 weeks, so I'm enjoying an adult beverage.
Well, I've had a lot of caffeine. That could be good or bad.
I actually woke up early enough today to have caffeine, because I don't allow myself to have caffeine after 11 a.m. So, and I got up at 10 today. And I was
That's a good rule of thumb. I need to try that. Anyway, here we go. The small, gray, dilapidated building stood hidden by the shadows of the larger, more modern buildings looming over it. The old sign, damaged and chipped, simply read, "Headshots," in large yellow letters. They looked like they maybe used to light up in their heyday. "Well, this must be it," said the girl aloud. She was younger, 19 to be exact, small-framed, long, wavy, dark hair. "Funny, this place seems like it's been here forever, but I've never noticed it," she thought. She pushed open the door. A small bell jangled when she opened it. The interior of the portrait studio was dim. Old yellow fluorescent lights flickered in the ceiling. The tiles stained from water damage. Musty-smelling blue carpeting lined the waiting area floor. Tons of portraits lined the wall across from the entrance, as if the images were staring out to glimpse the street through the old glass door, perhaps drawing customers. Some of the images were faded and crackled from age, but you couldn't deny how well each image was taken, as if you could feel each personality emanating from each image, each face telling its own story, all from a simple headshot. The girl was studying the photos so intently that she did not hear the individual who emerged from the back room. "Beautiful, aren't they?" said the gray-haired woman, donned in a red blouse, a large black brooch, and a pair of slacks. Her hair was up in a tight bun. She appeared very professional. "Oh, I'm sorry. You startled me. I didn't hear you. But yes, these really are captivating images," the girl stuttered. "So?" asked the woman. "Are you in need of some headshots?" The girl, feeling a bit nervous, reached in her pocket and pulled out her phone. She had an ad open up on it. I'm here because of your job listing. I'm an aspiring photographer, and while I haven't ever officially worked as one, I do have my portfolio with me," and the woman cut her off. "Slow down. Let's start with your name." "Oh, yes, my name. It's Samantha, but everyone calls me Sammy." "It's nice to meet you, Samantha. Let's have a look at your portfolio, shall we?" The woman flipped through Sammy's images, her face expressionless. "Very good. I see you are very drawn to portraits. That's good. The eyes are the windows to the soul, after all. Can you start tomorrow?" "Yes, thank you, ma'am," Sammy said with excitement. The woman spoke. "Please, don't call me ma'am. You may call me Wren, or boss, whichever you desire." "Yes, boss, thank you again for the opportunity. I can't wait to," her new boss cut her off. "Yes, it's time you left now. Be back here tomorrow morning. Sunrise, sharp." "Yes, ma'am, boss." The next morning, Sammy awoke, 4 a.m. She'd never woken up so early before, but perhaps they had a lot of setup to do before the morning time, adjusting some lighting and setting the cameras up. Sammy rubbed her eyes as she flicked on the light and walked to her closet. She wanted a dress to impress her new boss, but she wanted to be comfortable as well, since sometimes photography meant getting into some uncomfortable positions from time to time in order to get the shot. She tossed on a simple white blouse with a black blazer and some black slacks. She tied her hair up into a ponytail and grabbed a granola bar on her way out the door. When Sammy arrived, she heard Wren in the back. It sounded like she was moving things around. "Hi, boss. I'm here. What should I do first?" Samantha was excited. This was her first real job as a photographer, and though the place seemed old and like not many customers would come through, she couldn't get away from how beautiful the images on the wall were, and how she hoped that she could learn from Wren how to frame and light and pose and do everything to be able to create such beautiful photographs. "Over here, Samantha. Come. Have you ever worked with film before?"
Yes, I have, actually. I took a class in high school, and we had a unit in art about working with film. We even got to develop some photos in the school's old darkroom."
"Wonderful," said Wren.
"But boss, if I could ask, why not just use digital? It's what everyone uses now. Film is hard to even come by."
"Because," Wren said with a sharp tinge to her voice, "it's better this way. You can't capture images such as mine without film."
Sorry, I didn't have to hide your screen this time, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you see my face.
Yes, so thank I can you. See your face.
Thank you for letting me know that this time that you wrote this, so I know who to be angry at.
You're very welcome. "Digital. It just
"It doesn't work," she said as she clutched her brooch, the same one from yesterday. She must like that a lot. "Now, before we get started on the day, I need you to sign some things. Just some standard new hire paperwork. And I apologize, but you won't have much time to read through everything very closely. Customers will be arriving soon, and I need you to be ready. You can look over it closer at the day's end, but for now, if you could just sign everything so you can start working." And without giving it a second thought, Sammy signed each page, glancing here and there as she signed. "Must dress in a professional manner. Must wear flat-footed shoes. Must be prompt for work daily," etc., etc. Nothing out of the ordinary from what she skimmed. Now, this is the part we've been waiting for, haven't we, dear listener? The part where it all comes together, where young Samantha starts out her dream as a photographer, eager to learn and own her skills. Well, that would be quite boring if things played out just like that, wouldn't you think? Now, have a seat on the stool, Samantha, and smile. You need to know how to pose yourself and how the lights hit you in order to direct a customer. "All right, boss, so like this, right?" Sammy said as she turned her body ever so slightly to the side so as to frame her face nicer in the headshot. "Perfect. But be sure to look with your eyes, straight into the camera lens. We need to capture everything." And with that, the box lights flashed. They were incredibly bright, especially compared to the dim lighting of the waiting area. "Oh no, I think I may have blinked. I'm really sorry." "No, that's all right, Samantha. We will develop the images soon and see. I can capture you again if need be." "But it was just a test shot. Why would you need to recapture?" But before Sammy could finish, the bell over the door chimed. "Hello?" said a voice. "Hello. I'm needing a passport photo. Is anyone here? I couldn't tell if you were open or not, but the door was unlocked." "Welcome," said Wren, her voice very chipper and high, much more enthusiasm than her normal demeanor that Sammy had grown accustomed to after spending a few hours around her. "Yes, passport photos. So just a simple headshot then? Do you mind if my new photographer, Samantha, does them? You would be her first capture, and you'll pay up front. But if you're dissatisfied for any reason, we will retake them to your liking, free of charge." Yeah, sure. So long as it's decent. I just need one image. Thanks." "Very well, then. Follow Samantha to the back room." "Boss, are you sure? I haven't had time to use the camera yet. I thought I would be shadowing you first." "Nonsense," Wren replied flatly. "If you're to start capturing people, it's best to just jump in there before your energy of the day starts to dwindle." "All right then," Sammy replied. "I'll do my best." "Okay, sir. Just have a seat on this stool for me, please, and smile." "All right now, look into the camera, and ready?" The lights flashed. They seemed brighter than before. "I hope the images aren't going to be washed out, but boss assured me everything was adjusted as it should be," Sammy thought to herself. "Okay, sir. We just need a little while to develop your images, and then you can come back by and pick them up." "Yes. Thanks," the man said. He seemed almost dazed. Maybe he was unhappy with how I posed him, or maybe he was just in a hurry. He slowly rose from the stool, his eyes kind of blank. He walked out of the back room and headed towards the door. "Thank you, sir. We'll see you soon," Sammy exclaimed as the man exited the studio. The day carried on. A few more customers trailed in. Each time Samantha captured, sit, pose, capture, customer leaves. She was turning almost robotic with each image captured, but that is the nature of taking headshots, right? Not like a family photo where you have to move about and coordinate everyone and get the kids to smile and the mother to lower her chin and the father to remove his hat. Just sit, pose, capture. Wren, on the other hand, was becoming livelier with each customer, her demeanor drastically different from the woman Sammy met only yesterday, who was expressionless and very to the point with her words. "Well, that's it for today, Sammy. Why don't you get some rest and come back tomorrow morning? Sunrise again," Wren chirped. "Very well," said Samantha. She was exhausted by this point. She barely had enough energy to get herself home. Maybe she was just trying to adjust to waking so early. The next morning, Samantha woke, still feeling a bit tired, but her eagerness to get to her new job kept her from curling back up under the covers. I know it's mainly just headshots I'll be doing, but I'm still learning. And if I can be anything like Ren, then I'm happy to keep photographing, or capturing, as Ren likes to say. Then I'll be good enough in no time to spread my wings and maybe open my own studio someday. When she arrived at work, she noticed something different. Her eyes brightened a bit. Her photos! Each headshot she captured yesterday was hanging along a once blank wall, soon to be filled with headshots, just like the other wall of the waiting room. "Wow," Samantha said. "These images, I was worried the photos may not come out that great, because the lights were so bright, you know? But I'm glad I trusted your judgment, Ren. They are, well, it's honestly the best work I've ever done. You worked some magic with your setup." "No, Sammy," chuckled Ren. "You worked some magic, so now I don't have to." "Oh, your photo, by the way? You did blink, so I didn't quite capture you entirely, but I think that will be enough for now. We'll capture you in full another day. Then your story can hang on the wall. For now, you can just focus on capturing those headshots." That's it.
I don't trust her.
I don't trust her either.
It kind of reminds me of Goosebumps.
Ah, nice.
I could also be saying that, though, because I mentioned to my mom that Little Man has gotten into Goosebumps, and so she tracked down all of our old ones and dropped them by the other day. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Been reading Goosebumps and Fear Street.
Fear Street's good, too.
Oh, did you ever read, what was it? There's Fright Time, and, what was those other ones? Dead Time Stories.
Yes.
So, yeah, my mom brought those, and I was like, oh, I forgot about these! Terror in Tiny Town! These. It's like, well, obviously, I have to read them first to make sure that they're appropriate for Little Man.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and there's
just doing your duties.
Nothing wrong with a 30-year-old woman reading Goosebumps and enjoying it.
Hey, I put on the show every year for Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, no, I'm pretty sure that Ren is a witch, and I don't like her.
She could be a witch. She could be like an obnoxious energy vampire. Oh. She could just be some like weird old lady.
It's true.
Who knows? She could be any of those things.
She could just use weird verbiage.
Yeah. She might just like to say things in a weird manner. Definitely not up to something at all.
No. Nope. Not at all.
Not in the least.
Okay, then. Well, thank you so much for the story. I like it.
You're very welcome. Thank you. I'm glad you like it. Hopefully our listeners enjoy it. I'm not the best writer in the world, but I feel like I can throw out a pasta now and again.
I enjoy your pastas.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Sauce sticks to the noodle very well.
Good. I have just enough starch in there.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back. And we are back from our break, and it is actually my turn to start. But before we do that, we wanted to take a little time to thank our Patreon donors.
Yeah.
So first, we would like to thank the guys over at Nerd It Through the Grapevine. They were actually our first Patreon donors. Patreon? I don't know what to call them.
Patrons?
Patrons? Yes. Our patrons.
Patrons?
So, yes. So first we'd like to thank the guys over at Nerd It Through the Grapevine. So thank you Shazam, Dane, Marcus, Richard, and Tiny, whom I actually call Grandma.
Yes, thank you guys very much.
And we'd also like to thank Kimmy for choosing to join the Neighborhood Watch tier. And if you all would like to join as well, you can head over to patreon.com/nightmaretownpodcast to do that. At the end of the episode, we are going to take a little bit of time to tell you about those tiers, so stay tuned for that, because this story is going to be a bit rough. And it's not like the ones that I've covered in the past. I'm going to go ahead and give you guys a disclaimer and warning, I guess. Oof. There is child abduction, sexual assault, and murder. I will try to be as delicate as I can with this subject, and I know that it's not everyone's cup of tea, So if you want to skip my story, I will completely understand. And for you all that choose to leave, goodbye, and I love you. And for those who choose to continue, here we go.
All right.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so I got my research from Wiki, Murderpedia, LAWeekly.com, and a podcast called Hollywood and Crime, who did an amazing 7-part deep dive into this case. And as always, there are links that will be in the show notes. So Rodney James Acala was born Rodrigo Jaquis Acala Burcur on August 23rd, 1943 in San Antonio, Texas. And for a while, he had a happy childhood. When he was 8 years old, Rodney and his family moved to Mexico to help take care of his grandmother. And 3 years later, Rodney's father abandoned them. In 1954, when Acala was 11, his mother moved him and his two sisters back to the United States to a suburb in Los Angeles. Acala did really well in school. He had good grades, lots of friends. When he got older, he was said to go on lots of dates with girls. And after high school in 1961, Acala joined the Army. And I think this part is interesting because this is during the Vietnam War, which lasted between November 1st, 1955 to April 30th, 1975. But instead of being sent to the war zone, Acala worked on base as a clerk. For 3 years, everything was fine. Acala was doing well in his duties. He was well liked by his fellow soldiers and superiors. But then randomly one day, he went AWOL. He hitchhiked across the country from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to his mother's house in Los Angeles. And when he arrived, his mother recounted that he was frantic and had seemed to have had a mental breakdown. After getting him to calm down, she convinced him to turn himself into a local army recruitment office. So Acala did, and after being taken into custody by military police, he was given a psychological evaluation by the Army psychiatrist, and he was diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder and was discharged on medical grounds. So it took him some time, but Acala eventually went back to his old self. He seemed happy again and told his mother that he had chosen to go to school for photography. After going to a local community college to get his required credits, Acala enrolled in the UCLA School of Fine Arts. And this is where things are going to start getting bad. Again, if you want to skip now, this is the time to do it.
And guys, we normally don't have disclaimers like this on our episodes, so I would heed her disclaimer.
Yeah, I mean, like, we covered Tansler, and I'm just like, psh, yeah. But I think it's because this one has to do with a lot of kids.
Yeah.
So. But in the early morning of September 25th, 1968, a small 8-year-old girl named Tally Shapiro was walking alone to school along Sunset Boulevard. She didn't like to take the bus. The traffic in LA is legendary for its slowness, and it was already at a crawl. A car pulls up to the curb near Tally, and then a man in his mid-20s offers her a smile and a ride to school. Tally says she isn't supposed to talk to strangers, and he says he isn't a stranger, but a friend of her parents. And with a bit more coaxing, Tally got into the car, and they drove away. Luckily, this is not one of those, and she was never seen again moments. See, someone had seen the small girl getting into the man's car and had noticed that she seemed reluctant to do so. Donald Haynes had also been sitting in traffic along Sunset Boulevard and had noticed Tally walking and was reminiscing about the days long past while all he had to worry about was homework. He saw the beige car pull up to the little girl and saw the uncertainty on her face. It struck him as odd, but it really wasn't his business. He noticed the girl get into the car, and once again, he had an uneasy feeling. He thankfully listened to his gut and chose to follow the car. After it had parked at a Hollywood apartment complex, the man and little girl got out and entered a first-floor apartment. Mr. Haynes found a payphone and called the cops.
Good.
Yes, good on him. Also, 1968, my mother was also 8 years old, so... My mama. Worst case scenario, he was wrong and the little girl was the man's daughter and he would have to apologize. a few minutes later, Officer Chris Kamiko pulled up. Haynes told him what he had saw and pointed out the apartment that they had went into. Officer Kamiko called for backup and then knocked. After a while, 25-year-old Rodney Akala came to a side window, and when the officer asked him to let him in, he said sure, but to give him a minute. He had just gotten out of the shower. But the officer noticed that his hair, like the guy's hair, wasn't wet, so he thought it was kind of sus. So the officer is like, you need to open the door now. But Akala had already escaped out of the back of his apartment. Officer Kamiko kicked the door in, and while doing an initial sweep of the apartment, he found a small girl in the kitchen, beaten, assaulted, and with a metal bar across her neck. The officer thought that she was dead and used a towel to remove the bar from her neck as to not get his fingerprints on it before continuing to look for the suspect while backup arrived. After everybody had arrived and they started looking for the suspect, he returned to the kitchen and was surprised when he heard the girl cough. Tally was taken to the hospital, where it was touch and go for a while, but eventually she did wake up, and after a while she was able to tell the officers what had happened. Akala had offered her a ride to school, but said that he needed to stop by his apartment because there was a picture he wanted to show her. After they had entered the apartment, he had handed her a photograph that he had taken, and then her world went black. He had hit her in the head with the metal bar, and thankfully she didn't remember what he had done to her after that.
That's good, at least.
Yep.
Relatively speaking.
Yep. So, in his haste to flee the scene of his crime, Akala had left behind a lot of personal information, which made it super easy for cops to find out who they were looking for. They found his student ID from UCLA, and from there, they started interviewing friends, family, and old professors. All of them were shocked to hear what he had supposedly done, because the Rodney they knew wasn't capable of such horrors. But as the police built their case for Rodney Akala, he disappeared. Akala fled to New York, where he enrolled at NYU Film School under the name John Berger, stating that getting to study under director, producer, writer, and actor Roman Polanski was too good to pass up, and he assimilated himself into the hustle and bustle of the city like a chameleon. The podcast Hollywood and Crime, they have this really awesome little section right about this point where they're talking about how he would go into clubs and he would pick out a girl and just kind of follow her because he could.
Ugh.
Yeah. That's why you keep your head on a swivel and you look everywhere.
Scan the room.
Always. Someone's being shady, you hit them first.
Yes.
Don't do that. That's so you get thrown up bars.
Well.
You find a group and you stay with your group. You don't go off on your own.
Yeah.
Ugh. So, in 1969, Akala, now going by Berger, started working at the New Beginnings Arts and Drama Camp for Girls in New Hampshire as a counselor. He did this for a couple of years, going to school in the fall and working at the camp during the summer. He was a camp favorite, being a handsome man close to the camper's age, and he was easy to talk to and was patient with the girls as he taught them about photography. This went on for a few years, and then in 1971, Rodney Akala was added to the FBI's 10 Most Wanted list, and his photo was distributed to post office and police precincts. And that summer, two campers had made the small trek to the local post office to mail letters back home when a summer storm rolled in. The girls killed time waiting for the rain to die down by looking at the wanted posters, and they were shocked to see a familiar face, the face of their favorite counselor.
Mm.
They hurried back to camp to tell the camp director what they had found, and the director didn't believe that the man he knew could possibly be the same man that had done such horrible things to an 8-year-old child. But he did his due diligence, and he called the FBI, and they instructed him to not let John, quotations, know that they were on to him and that they were on their way. Akala was arrested August 1971 and was extradited back to California, where he stood trial. By this time, the Shapiro family had moved to Mexico to escape the bad memories of what had happened to their child, and when it came time for the trial, they chose not to return to the United States. Without little Tally there to tell the jury just what had happened to her, in her own words, Akala was able to plead guilty to the lesser charge of assault. Akala was paroled after 17 months in 1974 under the indeterminate sentencing program popular at the time, which allowed parole boards to release offenders as soon as they demonstrated evidence of rehabilitation. He was a model prisoner and was released, and then less than 2 months later, Akala would reoffend.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. He stuck to what he knew would work. He pulled his blue station wagon up to a bus stop where a 13-year-old Julie Johnson was waiting on a bus to go to school. Akala offered her a ride, and after some coaxing, she got into the car. After he got her in the vehicle, he asked Julie how old she was and was surprised when she said 13 and stated that he thought she was younger. At one point in the drive, Julie got nervous and started to reach for the door handle to get out at a stoplight. Akala grabbed her arm and convinced her that they would be there soon. Instead of taking Julie to school, he took her to Bolas Chica State Park, stating that he wanted to show her something beautiful. He took her to a scenic view where they sat on a boulder, and Julie was more scared than ever now. Akala pulled out a joint and took a few drags off it before handing it to Julie, and not knowing what else to do, she tries to do the same, but choked on the smoke. Akala then grabbed Julie and kissed her roughly, and as she tried to fight him off, she thought she was going to die. Ranger Jim Montgomery just happened to look up at the cliff where the two were sitting, and it was a bit odd to see people there during a weekday, but it wasn't unheard of. Usually the random hiker or kid skipping school to hide out in the park and to get high, so he went to check it out. When he approached the couple, he could smell the all-too-telling scent of weed and ask him what they were up to, spooked the couple, and soon the man was spinning a tale about them being out on a hike and that the girl was the one who had suggested they smoke the joint. Julie jumped up and said that she had been kidnapped. Ranger Montgomery took them both in to sort out what was going on, and after a little bit of digging, he discovered that the man was a known sex offender who had kidnapped a younger girl. Akala was on his way back to prison.
Hopefully. And,
yeah. Well, sadly, again, it wasn't very long. Akala served 2 years before he was once again released, but this time he was supposed to report to a parole officer just once a week. Akala was once again a model prisoner and parolee, and he was so well behaved, in fact, that he convinced his parole officer to allow him to make a short trip to New York to visit family. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, no, this story upset me. Like, I was like,
terrible justice system.
Yeah, because, like, this guy has a nickname, which we'll get into in a little bit. And it sounds like a fun whimsy murder, you know? Not really. There's no such thing as a whimsy murder. But it was one of those, I was like, yeah, no, I'll cover this guy. And then after I had already done research for, like, 2 days and couldn't really go back. Yeah, no. This story upsets me. But he arrived in New York during the 1977 blackout, which coincided with the Son of Sam murders. While in New York, cold case investigators believe Akala assaulted and killed Ellen Hoover, a gifted pianist and orchestra conductor. She was living alone in an apartment on 3rd Avenue in Midtown, and she went missing shortly after the lights came back on. And upon searching her apartment, they found John Berger, photographer, in her day planner on the day that she went missing. And if you remember, that was the name Dubrow used earlier.
Yeah.
Ellen's body was found buried on the grounds of the Rockefeller Estate in Westchester County. And then the next year, in 1978, Akala was hired as a typesetter for the Los Angeles Times, though he told them that his goal was to be the staff photographer. When he was hired on, he gave false information on former employment and references, and they never did a background check or called his references. Because if they'd just been like, background check, they'd been like, no.
Yeah, like, why wouldn't you do a background check?
Exactly. Now, by a crazy happenstance, there was another serial killer that was active in LA at the time. They were dubbed by reporters as the Hillside Strangler. We know now that there were actually two stranglers. They were two cousins by the name of Kenneth Bianchi and Angelo Bruno Jr., who kidnapped, assaulted, tortured, and murdered 10 women and girls ranging from 12 to 28 years old from October 1977 to February 1978. Since Alaka was on the sex offenders list, he wasn't surprised when police showed up at his mom's house to question him about the murders. That same year, Alaka became a contestant on a national television show called The Dating Game.
Oh!
Yeah. See, I knew I had heard it, but I don't think I've ever seen it, so I had to Google it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, this guy is known as the Dating Game Killer. So on the show, they would have one lucky lady who would interview three gentlemen who she couldn't see, and by the end of the show, she would choose one of the guys, and then the show would pay for them to go on like a super romantic, unique date. I think that the date that they were supposed to go on to, it was like tennis lessons, and then they were going to go to some amusement park. Alaka won the competition and the date with Bachelorette Cheryl Bradshaw, who subsequently refused to go out with him because she found him creepy.
Good job, Cheryl.
Yes.
Good.
So this is just directly from the wiki. Criminal profiler Pat Brown noted that Akila killed at least three women after his Dating Game appearance, speculating that this rejection might have been an exacerbating factor. One wonders that did in his mind, Brown said. That was written very weird.
Yeah.
Dingy, and move on. This is something he would not take too well. Serial killers don't understand the rejection. They think that something is wrong with that girl. She played me. She played hard to get. The women he murdered were named Charlotte Lamb, Jill Parenteau, and Robin Samso, who was only 12 years old. In 1979, Robin Samso and her friend Bridget were hanging out on Sunset Beach before Robin had to leave for her ballet lesson. They were approached by a man with a camera claiming to be a photographer who was looking for models to be in a picture he was hoping to enter in a contest. The girls agreed and he started taking pictures of them. Every now and then, he would come close to position them the way he wanted them to stand. This continued until a woman yelled, asking what they thought they were doing. Jackie Young was one of Bridget's neighbors, and she knew that Bridget and Robin didn't know the man that was taking photos of them. To the girl's surprise, the man just turned and walked away. So, Miss Young took the girls back home, where Bridget let Robin borrow her bike to get to ballet on time, saying that she would just get it back from her the next day at school. This would be the last time Bridget would ever see her bike or her friend. The instructor at Robin's ballet studio was worried when Robin didn't arrive on time. It wasn't like her. So she called Robin's mom to see if the girl was sick. When Mrs. Mary Ann Fraser heard this, she called Bridget to see if Robin was still with her and had just lost track of time. Bridget told her that about Robin borrowing her bike to get to her lesson earlier and that she hadn't seen her since. 12 days later, Robin's dismembered body was found in the foothills of Los Angeles. We're almost done, guys. We're almost done. After finding Robin's body, officers had Bridget come in and work with the sketch artist to make a deposit sketch of the man they had seen on the beach earlier, hoping that if he wasn't a suspect, then maybe he saw something, but they weren't having any luck. Later that night, an officer was watching reruns on TV and going over the case file when he happened to look up at the right moment and see the very face he'd been looking for. The officer just so happened to be watching a rerun of The Dating Game.
Snap.
Yep. That's some divine intervention. Now armed with a name, Rodney Akala. Why am I having trouble with that now? Now armed with the name Rodney Akala to go along with their sketch, police were able to run a search and, oh boy, the things they had found. Kidnapping, assault, attempted murder, drug charges, possible connection to a homicide in New York, Akala was looking less like a lead and more like a suspect. Officers found Akala in his mother's house in Monterey Park. Police found a rental receipt for his storage locker in Seattle. And in the locker, they found Robin's earrings, along with like 1,000 pictures of women. Oh. Akala was arrested in July 1979 and held without bail in 1980. He was tried, convicted, and sentenced to death for Robin's murder. But the verdict was overturned by the California Supreme Court because jurors had been improperly informed of his prior sex crimes. In 1986, which is when the eldest was born, after a second trial virtually identical to the first except for omission of the prior criminal record testimony, he was again convicted and sentenced to death. And there's this whole lot more to this story. Akala tried changing his appearance before he was arrested. After getting arrested, more murders were linked to him and more trials take place. At one point, he decides to represent himself and a bunch of rah-rah that I don't want to talk about because I'm done talking about this guy. And as I've said before, Hollywood and Crime did a deep dive that is just choice. So go check that out. Today, Rodney Akala is still in the California State Penitentiary where he is waiting on death row.
Finally, took long enough for him to get there.
Yeah, his first murder was when my mother was 8. And I believe one of his last appeals was in 2010.
Wow. Have you ever seen any clips of him on the dating game?
Oh, I did. Yeah.
No, aren't they creepy?
They
just
are.
Just his demeanor?
He's just... Well, like, one thing about him is that he's supposedly, like, super confident all the time, which,
yeah,
you know, if you have a guy going on TV, you want him to be super confident, and, like, that's kind of, like, that show was known for that, where they had, like, the little innuendos and whatnot. Yeah. So, and he's a sociopath. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was, like, masking super well. Like, it was just creepy to see how, like, I don't know. Normal he was like, acting on it.
I mean, he was overly aggressive about things, though. Apparently, like, right before the show started, he got in another contestant's face, and he was like, I always get the girl. And it's like,
It's like, dude, we're not even rolling yet. Quit being weird.
Quit being a dick. And then after she was like, I don't want to go on a date with him, he was like, what do you mean? What? Punch him in the face. Somebody punch him in the face for me.
Yeah.
That'd be great. If you could just do that, that'd be great. I got through it.
Well, that was a ride of a story.
Yeah, it was not whimsical at all, but it was definitely creepy.
Yeah, definitely fits the creepy bill.
And, you know, for our younger listeners, like Minnie, who probably does not remember a time where she went anywhere by herself.
Yeah.
And she's probably just like, why was an 8-year-old walking herself to school? That was normal. It was the 60s.
Yeah. Free range kids, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
In downtown LA. Was it LA or?
It was LA. It was Sunset Boulevard.
LA. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, that is all of the story that I have for that. So, Oh, it's my turn to do the thing. Would you like to go over our Patreon tiers while I do this?
Sure thing. Okay, so we have a few tiers. Our first tier is Neighborhood Watch. It's $5 per month. By joining this tier, you get early access to episodes. We will send you some stickers, and you also will get a shout-out during our episodes, like our two patrons at the beginning of this episode. Our next tier is Bella Break. That is $10 per month. You get everything that was listed in the first tier. You will also get a pin. You will have access to like a movie night, kind of like a Facebook stream, kind of. It'll be a private Zoom where we all get to just hang out and watch a movie together via the internet.
I think we're going to be setting up a Discord soon.
Yes, yes.
So we'll be able to link those accounts.
And you'll also get access to some behind-the-scenes things. Maybe some bloopers or just outtakes, a bit more of the chit-chatty stuff.
I'll probably also start posting my notes on there. So you can see just where I stop.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was thinking of sharing my progress notes for creating the story, because some of the notes jotted down are just like a couple words and don't really make sense, but kind of funny.
I love it.
So our final tier are creepy cryptids. That's $20 per month. You get everything in the above two tiers, Neighborhood Watch and Bella Break. You will also get access to some bonus episodes. You'll get to chat with us. And you will also receive a free miniature cryptid plush.
That Manda those, makes.
Yes, those are handmade by me.
With her love.
With my love. They fit in your pocket and they come with a description of their lore. But yeah, those are our tiers, so if you are interested in joining our Patreon, please do. We would love to have you here.
And the tiers are always going to be changing. Like, they might be that for right now, but we might switch it up a little bit, or, you know, we might do like a holiday special where we drop the price on one tier or something like that. I don't really know how Patreon works yet. I'm still figuring that part out. So I can't really make promises I don't know how to do yet.
We're learning. But, yeah, stick with us and see some cool stuff.
And if you don't want to do Patreon, that's also fine. Because if you have your own story to tell or ideas for the hack, go ahead and hit us up at nightmaretown18@gmail.com over on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Patreon, if you wanted to.
Oh, our website.
Oh, our website. Actually, our website has changed because it came to the time of year where we had to pay for the new one and we forgot to do that. And then Theo, my darling Theo, started looking on there for trying to get it back. And instead, he found one that's even better. So if you guys go over to NightmareTownPodcast.com. We got an M.
That's right.
You can go and submit your own stories or purchase your very own Bigfoot pin. So yeah. I have to go back on to all of our social medias and change that website name.
I was about to mention that. Have we changed those yet?
No, I can do that after this.
Yes, we'll get to it.
So, and our next episode is going to be called One Fine Day.
Ooh.
But yeah.
Write that down.
You guys should go and check that out because it's going to be super awesome. Also, I don't believe we said this, but happy holidays, guys.
Yeah. Happy holidays, y'all. It's coming up.
It's this week. And then I get out of quarantine.
Yay!
That's the important one. I get out of quarantine. But yeah, so I guess that's everything. We're actually going to jump off of this episode and go and record our holiday episode that is a Patreon exclusive.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's only going to be there. So if you guys want to listen to that, you know, consider joining our Patreon. But anyway,
until next time,
tell us a story. Bye.
Bye.